Hey friend, are you struggling to find consistent paid speaking gigs? Do you want to know the exact 6 steps that you can take to find and book more paid speaking opportunities in 2024? Well, we want to make that easy for you. We've created a new free resource with the help of Dan Irvin, one of our highly successful speakers on our team. Dan has booked over $100,000 in paid speaking gigs in the last few years, and his 6-step process is going to help you maximize your chances of getting booked and paid to speak in any industry. You're going to learn how to get started prospecting, master discovery calls and proposal emails, and so much more. All you got to do is go to thespeakerlab.com/steps, and we're going to send you this 18-page guide straight to your inbox. Again, that is thespeakerlab.com/steps, and you're going to get that free guide. Hey, thanks for listening. You're awesome. Hey, what's up, my friends? Grant Baldwin here. Welcome back to the Speaker Lab podcast. Whether this is your first time listening or if you've been listening to all 220 episodes, we are on episode 220 today, for those of you keeping score at home. However long you've been listening, we really do appreciate you being here. It does mean a lot to hear from people almost on a daily basis who listen to the podcast and talk about how it's helped them in their speaking business. And I hope 2019 is your best speaking year yet. So thanks for making us a little part of the journey, and honored and excited to help you out. Hey, before we get to today's conversation with today's guest, we got a great one for you. I really enjoyed this conversation with this friend. Before we get there, I don't know if you know, but we have a brand new YouTube channel. This is something we've been working on for a couple months now behind the scenes. And we have been doing a lot of speech breakdowns, taking some of the more popular TED Talks and presentations, motivational speeches online, and walking through breaking down the things that work, the things that don't work, how you can apply them to your next presentation. So whether you're giving a speech in your company or you're a public speaker and giving more public presentations, we're going to walk through simple little tips and strategies of things that you can apply to your next talk to make sure that you nail it. So stop by and check that out over at youtube.com/thespeakerlab. Again, you can find it over at youtube.com/thespeakerlab, or just search for The Speaker Lab inside YouTube there. And if you like it, then make sure you subscribe to the channel. So that really helps us out. Subscribe to the channel, like the videos, comment on the videos, and also let us know if there is a speech breakdown of a TED Talk or some presentation that you would like for us to break down in a video in the future. So drop that in the comments there and let us know. All right. So today we are going to be chatting with Jason Hewlett from Utah. And Jason is a very successful speaker. We're going to talk through his journey of how he got started. He was someone who, like a lot of people who had the dream, the desire to be a speaker, just no idea where to begin. One of the things we call that is having the potential but needing the plan. Having the potential but needing the plan. So that was very much Jason whenever he got started. He is very, very animated on stage. So we talk about that, how he uses that in his speaking business. And we also talk about the balance that he finds between content and humor. Because for a long time, the bulk of what he did was kind of this performance type of thing with voices and with characters and with impressions and impersonations. And so how did he make that transition to doing more keynotes where he's still able to incorporate that, but yet often at the same time be taken more seriously as a keynote speaker? So we talk about that transition that he made and some tips and ideas that he has. So really great conversation. I think you're really going to dig this. So let's get right into it. Here's my conversation with Jason Hewlett from jasonhewlett.com. Enjoy. Hey, what's up, my friends? Grant Baldwin here today, joined by my buddy Jason Hewlett, who is a professional speaker, entertainer, and all-around good dude. Is that a fair way to put it? You need to put that in your introduction. Just all-around
good. I'm using that. That's my new intro. Thank you.
There it is. We just wrote it for you right there. How you doing, man?
I'm great. This is awesome. I love your podcast. I love all the work you do. Very cool to be involved.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you saying that. I appreciate you taking a minute to chat with us. So let's start with this kind of big picture. What do you do as a speaker? How many speaking gigs are you doing? What kind of audiences are you speaking to? What do you speak about? Give us that high level view.
Yeah. So I'm a keynote speaker. I prefer the closing keynote slot, but I'm happy to do wherever they need me.
Why is that? Because I know some people who love the opening and some people who love the closing, and there's pros and cons with both.
The reason for the closing, in my opinion, is because of the way that I weave in family messaging. Okay. And so I am now making them rush home to keep promises with their family. And this is a part of the keynote that the client did not purchase. They don't realize they're getting that as an added benefit. Okay. And so as an opening keynote, I can actually, create the theme and help out with all that throughout the event. But as a closer, it's really fun to send them away with this idea of, you know, family and want to recommit to them and so forth. And so, yeah, I would say I'm averaging between 50 and 60 keynotes per year. And for years, I was doing around 200 dates a year as both entertainer, speaker, master of ceremonies. That included everything from cruise ships to public shows to county fairs, and then speaking at schools and everything else. So I did that for probably, I would say, between 2003 and 2012 as mostly an entertainer. And then I have transitioned into being a keynote speaker. And so that's my main shtick and gig now. And I speak about the promise that we make to our audience, to ourselves, and to our family. And so this is just a very basic concept, but it's obviously wrapped around this entertainment presentation that makes everybody go, well, this is exciting, this is fun, and they're laughing, they're engaged, and then I slam it home with this concept of commitment.
Switch. Now, what kind of audiences are you typically speaking to, or what industry are you working in?
I'm finding really that a lot of it is the IT industry, oddly enough, and the healthcare industry. Because why I say oddly enough is because typically IT guys are not your most responsive as far as clapping and laughing.
Yeah, totally.
However, I do this whole bit about how nerdy IT guys are, and we all laugh about it, and then they're fully engaged. And it's fun to hear the clients say, we've never seen our IT team not pick up their phone for a full hour and be zoned out. Instead, they're watching and engaged with you. That's a cool compliment. So that's what's been happening as a keynoter for them. And I used to do mostly multi-level marketing and direct sales companies as either an MC or a showman for those. So it's been an interesting switch as a keynoter.
And I want to talk through some of that switch, but before we get there, let's kind of backtrack for a second. What were you doing pre-entertainer days?
You know what? I was just a kid. I had nothing going on other than just going into my new world. I was a missionary for my church, lived in Brazil for 2 years. That was exciting. Learned Portuguese. And then when I got home, I talked to all these older men and I said, what would you do with your life if you could do it over? And they all told me, I would go back and go for a dream that was crazy, that I never got to because I established a career instead. And so I just thought, well, then I should go for it. So I started with the Las Vegas Legends in Concert and became an entertainer, a Ricky Martin impersonator and Elton John impersonator in Las Vegas for them. And then that's how my career started. So I've never had a real job, man.
That's cool. All right. So you do the entertainment thing for a little while. How long are you in Vegas doing that?
I was just back and forth for about a year until I received an offer to have my own one-man show of impressions and music and comedy. And that was really my whole goal all along, was to be a headliner in Vegas. And as I'm meeting with different casinos, I'm realizing they had a different audience than I had for myself. And I had made a promise long ago, my show would always be clean and family friendly. Yeah. And at the time, Vegas was leaving their whole "we're about family" concept that wasn't working and going into what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Right. And it just didn't match up with what I was working toward. And so when I was offered some pretty cool deals, I just kind of walked away and said, well, I'll just go do my own thing and run around the country as a corporate entertainer. So that's why no one's ever heard of me.
So how do you go that? Like, how do you make that transition? Because let's say you're at that point in Vegas where you're doing the impressions, you're doing the shows, and you're like, okay, I enjoy doing this. I see how I could probably do better or make more or enjoy it more if I was doing my own thing and I'm kind of in control of my own destiny. But that's not like I'm going to quit my job on Friday from Vegas and now all of a sudden Monday I've got a full calendar of corporate entertainment gigs. Like, how do you begin to make that transition?
Yeah, what really happened is I went from kind of the cream of the crop of who was up and coming in Las Vegas to now all of a sudden being blacklisted completely and not ever getting another opportunity there because I turned it away. And so when I moved back to Utah, which is a very conservative place to live, and I'm of the same culture, all of a sudden I just figured I could be the family entertainment guy for these folks here. And so I created this show. And I was doing a lot of free events to create that. And that's what I teach to everybody that asks, you know, how did you get all of your gigs? How did you start? I just did as many as possible. And was it Steve Martin that said, hey, be so good they can't ignore you?
Right.
And so that's what I worked on, was just becoming the best entertainer they'd ever had at an event. And whether it was a birthday party that led to school, that led to a carnival, that led to a corporate event, that's kind of how it all built up. And really, the great thing that I was good at was being amazing on stage, doing something that was clean for families and corporations. And then I had incredible follow-up. So I found that all I had to do is become friends with the clients. The next thing I know is they would bring me back every single event they needed. And then when they left that company, they'd take me over there. And everybody was doing that I became friends with. And so it's really an organic situation, how it all began.
Yeah, this is such a relationship-based business, and relationships just take time. And so, yeah, you can. It's oftentimes interesting and fascinating when you book some gig today that you can really trace the roots back to 3, 4, 5, 10 years ago. That's really, really hard to reverse engineer at times from a marketing perspective of, if I just do this, and then I meet that person, then I kill it in that random thing, and then their cousin sees me, and all of a sudden it leads to where I am today. That's really, really hard to do, but it sounds like just a lot of persistence over time is really what's built it up. So I'm curious then, what you're doing a lot of those free entertainment gigs, just building your name, building the show, starting to like figure some things out. What are you doing at that time though to pay bills and eat and live indoors and make ends meet?
I made just enough with those events, you know, 100 here, 500 there, 1,000 here, 2,500 there. It was very hard to push the Utah corporate market up, probably around 2005 or six, to get it up to a $5,000 level for an entertainer that's unknown, unproven, and doesn't have any name value. That's what I was able to do in the market.
Yeah.
And when I got to that point, then all of a sudden things were good. But yeah, those were some hairy days for sure, waiting for the money to come in. But I realized if I did 200 dates a year, I could string enough together to be able to pay the bills. And that really did work. So it was a serious hustle, and no sleep, no family time, no opportunity to really create, because I had already created what it was. And so I was just racing back and forth to every single event until finally it started to hit where I was like, man, I can get 5,000 per gig.
Yeah.
Now I can lay back a little bit. And then all of a sudden the recession hits. And what happened is all my speaker buddies had no work. Whereas because I was an entertainer, and what we know in recessions is that people want entertainment. And so I was still making a really good living during the recession. Very interesting.
Yeah.
And eventually realized that, man, if I just couple this with a leadership message, which people were requesting, that I could be an entertaining speaker and they would still bring me in. So that worked out well in that case.
Interesting. Yeah, I want to come back and talk some more about that as well. But so you're doing the entertainment thing. How are you finding gigs at that point? Or it sounds like it's a lot of, because of the volume that you're doing, is it just a lot of word of mouth? Is there any particular industry or niche or topic that you're working on? Is it more corporate or churches or colleges or schools, or just kind of like anybody who would allow me to come in, sign me up, I'm in for?
That's what it was. And I see the frustration in the faces of the young entertainer or young speaker that's asking me how I did it. Because when I tell them what I did, as far as performing at birthdays and weddings and places you would never want to perform as a performer, I was doing that. And I had other friends and mentors that were magicians that were doing 5 or 6 parties per day. And I realized those guys are just doing volume. So should I. And so when I tell somebody new coming in, hey, this is what I did, this is how it worked for me, they look at me like I'm insane. And I just say, hey, you know, I don't have a better marketing strategy for you other than be awesome and go give it away as much as possible. And eventually they'll start paying you. And so as far as what the industries were, yeah, what you just said, it was everything everywhere. I would jump on a cruise ship for 10 days and make $3,500. And over the 10-day trip, and then I'd come back to Utah, and I would do, you know, a fair and a 5 assemblies at schools, and then I would go do a corporate event, and the assemblies at schools were $500 for 5 assemblies, you know, all together. Yeah. And then I'd do a corporate date for $5,000 that night. When people wonder about, well, where's the integrity of the fee? The question is, can I still give back? And what I would say to the corporations is, I would say, you guys are paying me my full fee which I appreciate so much, and that allows me to give back to the community that could never afford it. So I'm going and performing for the military, for the, you know, the old folks home, and telling the corporations, you're providing this service to people. And that actually made them want to help me more. It's very interesting.
That is fascinating. So the show that you would come in and do from an entertainment perspective, because it sounds like, again, you do, it sounds like you do a couple of different things. You do the impressions. I know you do some singing. You got a few different things in the bag of tricks there. So it's not like he's a magician or he's a hypnotist. He does a few different things there. So why were people bringing you in a typical event or a typical setting? What slot would you fill for them?
So at the beginning of my career, I was the after dinner entertainment.
Okay.
And that was at the end of an award show, usually. And so what I then eventually realized is after I'm doing all this entertainment at the end of the awards banquet, I would then resell them for the next year because they would say, how do we find someone that's this good, that's this price, that's this clean? And I would say, there's nobody. Bring me back.
And I know a guy.
Yeah. And so they'd bring me back. But this time, they would say, you know, can you MC the whole event? Sure. And then the next year they'd say, can you maybe give a speech? Sure. So then I would be keynote in the morning. I'd MC the whole event through the day. And then I would be the show at night. I mean, there was nobody that I knew at the time that was doing anything like this. And it was just the ability to have enough content that they could actually say, gosh, we could bring him back over and over again. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I was doing.
So one of the things we talk about on the show sometimes is that event planners and event organizers, they're in the risk mitigation business. And so if they have seen you before, they have someone who has seen you before, or even better, if they have worked with you before, then they just know, like, that's a low risk thing. We like Jason. We want to work more with Jason. And so if you have all these other things that you could do in all these other capacities, because oftentimes with conferences, as you well know, you may come in and do a great job from a keynote perspective, and they're like, that was phenomenal. We'll call you in 3 to 5 years and have you back because they want some other speakers or they want some different faces. But if you have other things and other ways that they could use you, it certainly makes you more valuable in ways that makes it a lot more likely that they're going to bring you back the following year rather than having to wait multiple years before they bring you back.
And this is why it's been tricky for somebody to be my agent, for example, or to work with bureaus for me, is because I have so much direct work that has always spun back.
Yeah.
And I've been the master of ceremonies for some companies anywhere from 7 to 10 years in a row. And all I'm doing is just coming back with the same who I am, but also new ideas, new bits, new ways of bringing it all together. So they like that. I don't actually offer the MC thing as much anymore just because it's so much work. I went from just doing award ceremonies to then doing like the evening to then doing 3 days. And I just said, man, this is crazy amounts of work and the pay. I could just stand up and do an hour keynote versus 3 days and get paid a little bit more. And so I only do that for a very select few amount of companies. But you're right. They, as event planners, are putting their lives on the line in bringing you in. And so what I like to help them realize is it's not just me on stage you're getting like a professional event planner to work with you who can also jump up on stage and fill in when Chuck Norris's plane doesn't arrive on time and can also fill in when Led Zeppelin's tribute band doesn't show up on time. And so that's how my career has continued to thrive.
Are you speaking from experience? Have those two scenarios actually happened?
Yeah.
So I'm curious. It sounds like then you're doing the entertaining thing. Today you're doing a lot more keynotes. Was the MC kind of the transition from point A to point B? They just think of me in this entertainment role. They don't quite think of me as a keynoter yet. And so an MC is a good way to kind of bridge the gap.
Great question. I really had to sell the idea of me being a keynote because when you're known as the Jim Carrey guy, Hey, he's so funny. Like, that's what they knew me as. They're like, how can he be a keynote?
Right.
But we know he's sophisticated enough to run our event as the MC. And so it really has taken a lot of work to create this keynote concept. And I've had to build my business pretty much from scratch with an all new industry, all new everything as the speaker. So yeah, well, I guess you would say there was a little transition there with me being an MC and proving that I could be competent enough on a stage. But really, those groups that used me as an MC, sometimes they would give me the mic when the CEO was too scared to go out there, or the guy didn't show up that was their keynote because, you know, he's getting 80 grand and he doesn't care about their company. But I'm standing there and they need to fill 40 minutes, and I'd go out and do my keynote they'd never heard and then knock their socks off. And then that's kind of how this keynote thing really started to roll.
So was the idea that, or did it, I guess the kind of almost the genesis of it come from the fact that you're doing the entertainment stuff, you really enjoy it, it's a volume game, so you have to just do a lot of things, so you're gone a lot. Sounds like, and I know that there's a lot of speakers that we're mutual friends with there in Utah, are you starting just to see like, oh dang, you got paid how much to do what? I could do that, you know? Is it more of that, or was it just you were gone so much, or where did it kind of begin to make the transition of mentally of even just like, I like entertaining, it's a lot of fun, but I feel like I could do it in this different way and maybe do it more effectively and efficiently?
Yeah, those are great questions. Those speakers were friends of mine ever since I began my career, because I joined the National Speakers Association chapter in 2003. So I knew what they were all doing. My kind of end goal was to be a type of Tony Robbins meets Zig Ziglar meets Jim Carrey and Billy Joel, like this thing that no one had ever seen before. I wanted to get to the speaking world, and it was so hard to break out of entertainment guy and become speaker guy. And so there were a couple reasons. First of all, my dad's a great speaker. I wanted to be like him. And I grew up reading all the great books, The Greatest Salesman in the World, Think and Grow Rich, As a Man Thinketh. And so I always wanted to be the speaker. But there was, because of the volume of the work I did as an entertainer, there was a time when my hero in Las Vegas died at the age of 50. His name is Danny Gans. And it was because he was using his voice to such a degree, he had to take certain things synthetically to keep on the stage every single night, destroying himself. And then in perfect looking health, he died. And then a month later, Michael Jackson at 50 died. And I went to the doctor after I had been killing my voice, I was doing 100 voice impressions per show, like anywhere from Led Zeppelin, hey, hey, mama, I can make you a gonna make you a, you know, all the way to, what a wonderful world, do-ba-do-go-do-da-da. You know, so I'm like destroying my vocal cords. I went to the doctor in my 30s, and I was like, hey, I'm coughing up blood after the shows. What's going on? And he's like, you're destroying your gift, and you got to change that. And he said, so you better make a career shift. Now, at the time, I'm making six figures. I was doing well, and I'm doing a million shows, you know. And I said, well, what am I supposed to do? And that was when my wife and I decided we're going to cut back on a lot of things financially and see if I can make it as a speaker. It's been a long transition, but there were some major reasons as to why to do it. I hope that explains a little bit.
Yeah, totally. So you have a variety of different reasons, including a potential health scare there and just kind of this aha moment, not necessarily in a good way, it sounds like, of like the path I'm on, although I enjoy it, is not leading to a destination that I really want to go to. So you decide to make a run at it as a speaker. But to your point, you mentioned that it felt like you were starting over. I built this huge business as an entertainer. I have all these relationships and these clients. They don't necessarily take me seriously as a speaker, or they don't feel like maybe I'm, you know, Jason, we want to keep working with you, but like, why don't you stay over there and the bounce house that you've created? And I don't know that we have a fit for you over here. So like, how do you overcome that? How do you, like, if people, and I say that not just from an entertainment to a speaker transition, but I know of other speakers who have said, okay, I talked to a speaker recently who said, I speak primarily to colleges and I'm making the transition to corporate and it's just hard to be taken seriously. And I've been pigeonholed in this role and now I'm trying to go to that role. And so trying to make that segue. So what did that process look like for you?
Okay. So I talked with a guy recently that's doing the exact same thing. The advice that I told him from the colleges to the corporate was, I said, if they can't pay you, you need to go in there and just prove that you're good. You need to capture the footage. You need to start from scratch. Go do an afternoon if they won't give you the evening slot. Go do a training meeting if they're not going to give you the main stage at their event. Do whatever it takes to get in front of people. If you're actually good, you will eventually make this work. And I swear to you, Grant, That is what I have done. I have gone into these businesses and said to them, even my old clients who loved me and hired me 10 times as the entertainer and 10 times as the MC, and I'd say, I want to come speak. And they'd go, loser, you know, and I'd say, just bring me in. So then I said, let me do your afternoon leadership meeting on a Monday. All you're losing is 45 minutes if I stink. And then I swear to you, this just has happened in the last 2 years. I went in, did the leadership meeting. They flipped out. I came in, did the manager's meeting. They flipped out. I did all these for free. They had paid me in the past. So it was okay for me to say, I'm giving back. Now, I swear to you, 2 days ago, they called and said, we want you as our opening keynote speaker for the kickoff. We have your full fee. We're so excited to have you. And I thought, oh my gosh, I've just recreated what I did as an entertainer. Yeah. All I had to do is get in front of them. Because I tell you, as important as video is, that's not going to convince any of my clients to have me. I create something that has to be experienced. It just does. I don't say it well on a video. It doesn't come across. We're still trying. But you get me in a room, I'll create electricity and energy that they'll be like, what do we do next time? In fact, I had a client the other day that after I had done the event, they said, we're either going to cancel next year or we need you back. And I was like, man, that's as a keynoter. Yeah. Like, how did this happen? That's just called grunt hard work. That's all it is.
So do you feel like as you're making that transition that there are times that you want to quit or that you want to give up? Because it sounds like that's a very, very humbling transition. Of you want to be like, do you know who I am? Or do you be like, do you know who I am over there to those people? And but yet still to then they're like, we've worked with you, you're great, you're phenomenal, but we just don't see it. And you're like, oh, come on, just give me a shot. So like, how humbling is it? Or do you have moments where you're like, screw it, like the keynote route just isn't worth it. It's worth, let's just stay in the entertainment lane. I can just do that and we'll, you know, figure it out. So what's kind of going through your head during that transition?
Yeah. I mean, for the last 4 years, I've thought about quitting every week. It's been brutal. You know, what's weird. If you can see up here, and obviously this is the recording, but on the video that we're recording, you can see my CPAE Speaker Hall of Fame trophy right up there on my shelf. Now, imagine me coming to somebody and saying, I'm in the Speaker Hall of Fame. And they go, well, you're the entertainer guy. And so even with that, I remember when I got that award, the next week I went to an event and they had demoted me from what I thought I was doing to, I thought I was going to be their keynoter and their MC. And they demoted me to doing on the street interviews with an iPhone. It was embarrassing. I mean, but this is a humbling business. And if we're humble enough to listen to what they say to help us improve rather than quit, then that's all this is about. If we're humble enough to watch a video of ourselves after we've given a keynote and we see the evaluation forms that say, this guy stinks, and you watch it and you go, they're right. I do stink, but I know I can get better. Yeah. And all I have to do is continually improve. This is just a constant improvement opportunity. And that's how I've looked at it. It's been really fun. Although it's devastating, it's fun.
Right. There's those days where you come off stage and you're like, I legit killed it. That went really well. And then there's a day you're like, I just need to go get a job at Walmart. Like, this is not good for my self-esteem and my emotional health right now and everything in between. So, all right. One thing I'm curious about is you come from an entertainment background. When I speak personally, I love using comedy. Comedy is a great way to connect with an audience. It's a great way to build that rapport and connection. But it's also really easy to get addicted to that to the point where you err way more on the side of entertainment and comedy to the point where like those evaluations are like, the guy was super entertaining. Jason was great. I didn't really learn anything, but I laughed a lot. So how do you find that balance today of, I'm going to really entertain you. I'm going to make you laugh, but I'm also going to give you something practical and tangible that you can leave with. So how do you find that balance?
Such a killer thought, because, you know, that's what the evaluation forms have been saying for the last few years. And, you know, Grant, if I don't get a standing ovation at an event, it's very rare. And I don't remember the last time I didn't get a standing ovation at an event, you know? And that's just kind of what I've been able to do as the entertainment speaker guy. But when I see those evaluation forms saying he's just entertaining, there's no content, that really hurts. And so what I did was I actually contacted a guy who is the complete opposite person and speaker of me. He's a friend of mine named Stephen Shapiro. He's a Hall of Fame speaker. He's brilliant. He speaks, you know, about all of these things that I would never be able to conceive in my brain of speaking on, analytical and so forth. And so what we did is we actually went to Las Vegas and we stayed in a hotel room for 3 days and we watched each other's presentation through the eyes of each other, how we could add, I could add entertainment to his and I could add storytelling to his and performance, where he took mine and he said, dude, this is so entertaining. There's no content here that's actually a process that can be taken away. What is your process? He helped me mine the process out. Now I have an actual process, man, like a cycle that people can utilize in their business. And it's so simple, but it was like, that was not being delivered. We did that in August, Grant, and it is now the end of November. And here's the thing. My evaluations went from he's entertainment based, but very little content. Now all of a sudden he is the funniest, entertaining speaker we've ever seen and the best, easiest applicable content I've ever seen on the same evaluation form. That's crazy. I've been thrilled with it, but I had to see it through the eyes of someone opposite of me. Instead of just talking to my entertainment speaker friends, I had to go to a guy who's talking about innovation and things I don't even think about. Does that make sense?
Yep, absolutely. How important has it been for you to connect and network with other speakers in your space?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the best part. We're all flying around like eagles here, you know, solo at all times. And so it's nice to have a, you know, the different groups, whether it's on Facebook or with the national speakers or if you're a Toastmasters person or whatever. Yeah, I mean, those relationships are lifelong. And actually, my kids go to the National Speakers Association convention, which is called Influence. Mm-hmm. And it's every year in the absolute hottest place in the world. And, you know, they get that real good discount. But here's the thing. They go to this camp, meet all these other kids that are speaker kids. Yeah. And these are the best kids you'll ever find. And it's so neat to integrate our families with our business and make it all work that way as well. So yeah, my speaker buddies are my favorite people of all time.
I want to go back to something you said earlier that when you're getting going, and my assumption would be even still today, that a lot of your success has come from two things. One, just hard work and perseverance, but two is just follow-up and having good systems in place. Could you talk a little bit more about that and what that looks like on the business side?
Yeah, for me, the follow-up is simply right after the event, I'm contacting the client maybe in a text or a call, just a quick, you know, hey, thanks so much for having me. You're the best. I always take a selfie with the client. And what I do is I do something very simple that most people don't think about. I'll print the picture at Walmart. I'll buy a little Hobby Lobby frame. I'll sign it, you know, because now I'm creating a celebrity out of myself, even though I'm not a real celebrity. And I'm sending it to the client as a thank you. What's fascinating is I've found through the years, a client generally will have three things on their desk. They'll have a picture of their family, maybe a portrait of Jesus, and a picture with me. And that's kind of a nice...
In that order.
Yeah. And so what I'm saying is, I do this follow-up in the sense of, these become my friends. We're Facebook friends. We're LinkedIn connected. We're constantly back and forth. I actually then will follow up and I'll say, hey, such a great event. You know, I know you guys are planning it in January for your October event. If I can recommend to you any other speakers, I'd be happy to. And generally they'll come back and say, we've gotten such good reviews. We need to have you back. And that's a neat thing, obviously, but it's really neat for me when I get to say, here are three speakers you should consider. And if you can't have this one this year, you have them lined up for the next few till you need me back. That's really been a wonderful benefit. And a lot of my speaker buddies and I do that together. We just refer each other back and forth and say, oh, you had Mark Scharenbroch this year? Well, you need Jason Hewlett next year, and you need Clint Pulver this year, and you need Ross Bernstein that year. And we just kind of refer back and forth. And then to get the ladies involved, Connie Podesta and Christine Cashin, and we have all these connections that we can get each other events. It's really nice, you know?
It's kind of a unique world. And I remember this is kind of an epiphany for me early on, to like, And in a lot of ways, we're all competitors, but at the same time, the pie is big enough for everybody and not one person's going to be able to speak at anything. And so like we were kind of talking about, the model for most events is you may show up and do a great job and they may not have you back for a couple of years. Well, I want to come back in a couple of years. And so I need to build that rapport and relationship with them between now and then. And so that may mean I say, hey, I know you're not going to have me for a couple of years. You need to have my friend Jason, or you need to have John over here or Susie over there, and have these people in, because I know if you show up and do a good job, it makes me look good and they're going to be a lot more likely to work with me in a few years. So it goes back to, you know, just the value of having those other relationships with speakers and how much that can be helpful, just from like a mental, emotional state of just talking through the business, but also from a business perspective of being able to just share business and be able to send those leads among each other.
Yeah, very well said. And, you know, I say to my clients, I want to partner with you to plan your next event so that you continue to build on what we just did. And yeah. So let me help you find the right speakers. And so what's happened, Grant, is that now they're calling me and saying, okay, we need opening speaker, hump day speaker, closing speaker. We need an MC and we need entertainment. What do you recommend? I mean, now all of a sudden I'm doing entire events just as a friend for all my friends.
Yeah.
And that's a neat place to be in, you know, a place of trust with your clients. It's a crazy level.
Yeah. Very cool. Hey, to wrap up here, what would you say to that speaker who's listening right now, who is where you were many years ago, getting started? You know, one of the things we talk a lot about is having the potential, but needing the plan, right? And you felt like, I can do this if someone would just freaking give me a shot. So what would you say to that speaker who's getting going? They're trying to build some momentum. There's days where you feel like on top of the world, and there's days where it feels super discouraging and you're wondering if it's worth it. What would you say to that speaker?
I would say, if this is truly meant to be for what you want to do with your life and your career, then it's time to burn all ships and it's time to go for it. So whatever that looks like for you, if that means that you live in a 5,000 square foot home with a $3,000 a month payment, maybe it's time to scale back. Maybe you need to move into an apartment, save some money, find your lowest end of the amount of money you need to live on, and then go figure out how you can make that work. That could be by going in and doing assemblies and those kind of gigs that you're like, why would I ever want to do that? Well, if you don't want to speak at a school when you get started, or you don't want to speak at a fair, then this probably isn't the right thing for you, because there will be times when you're landing at an airport and the connection you just missed requires you to drive all night one way in the dark from Detroit to Traverse City, dodging deer and never having been in the state. And you get there at 7 a.m., run in from your car, deliver your presentation, and they don't even know what you just went through, and you fly away. If you're not willing to do that, then this is not the place for you. But if you are that passionate about this kind of a career, you can make it happen. Because if guys like me and the other guys that you've seen speak can do it, then so can you. It's just a matter of hustle and faith and love and passion for it.
Yeah, totally agreed. And there's probably a large percentage of people listening going like, that driving through the night thing just sounds really good if it means I get to go speak somewhere. Whereas I'm sure a fair amount of the population is like, that just sounds like a horrible idea. I have no idea why you do that. So reminds me, several years ago, I had a speaker buddy who's kind of new and kind of up and coming. And he called me and said, hey, I missed connection and weather and something. And it was going to be like an 8-hour drive. And he's like, what am I supposed to do? I was like, you start driving, dude. Like, you do not miss a gig. You do whatever you have to do. And so he made it, went well. But yeah, that's part of the love of the gig and love of the business. So clearly that's something that you have and something that has really benefited you. So thanks for sharing that with us today. So Jason, if people want to find out more about you and what you're up to, where can we go?
You know, my name is Jason Hewlett, JasonHewlett. And jasonhewlett.com is where, if you want to look at some of what I do as a keynoter. I also have an online program at jhetraining.com. And obviously, in no way does it compete with what you, Grant, have created, because you have like a monstrous amount of greatness that you have provided. But what all this is that I've created an online program called How to Make a Career from the Stage. It's very nominal fee for anybody looking to get 6 or 7 hours worth of video, a 55-page workbook, just kind of how to get the mindset going, figure out your message, what's your audience, and going for it. So yeah, there's a couple of different places, but I'd love to connect on social media or wherever you want to. And it's wonderful to be on this podcast. I'm so impressed what you have done for the community of speaking. And thank you for letting me be a part of it today, man.
Thanks, man. I appreciate the kind words. I'm very humbled. And we enjoyed having you on here, man. This was a lot of fun.
Right on. Take care.
All right, there you go. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jason Hewlett. Again, if you want to check out more of his stuff, I feel like you need to see his videos to get the full scope and breadth of what it is that he does. So stop by, check it out, jasonhewlett.com, H-E-W-L-E-T-T.com. So again, really good stuff there from Jason. Hey, like I mentioned at the beginning, if you haven't already, definitely check out our new YouTube channel, especially all of these speech breakdowns that we are doing. So we've done speech breakdowns from a variety of different super popular TED Talks. So definitely stop by, check it out. You can go to YouTube and search for The Speaker Lab, or you can go to youtube.com/The Speaker Lab and it'll take you straight there. So if you like what you find, make sure you subscribe to the channel. And if you're not already, make sure you subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss out on a single episode when we crank those out on a weekly basis. All right. Hey, thanks for tuning in. We appreciate you being here and we will catch you next time. You're awesome.